Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer, and this is Double Coverage, talking all things State and Ole Miss. And Logan, it's a good week to talk about State and Ole Miss since they play one another starting Friday night. We have the traditional Friday, Saturday, Sunday baseball series this week. I kind of like the Thursday to Saturday setup, man, that we both had last week. What about you?
Yeah, I really did. I got to spend Easter with the family, and that's something that's always kind of hit and miss. Part of my family actually has a family reunion every Saturday before Easter, so I did have to miss that this year. But, I got to spend the entire Sunday with the family, went to church, did the afternoon thing with the niece and nephew thing, hunting Easter eggs outside. So, yeah, I mean, it was good. You know, anytime you're not distracted by, having to rush to a ball game on Sunday afternoon, it's great. You know, finally got to sort of live like a normal person for a day. So I enjoyed that.
Well, it's a top 15 series coming up at Duty Noble Field, Polk Dement Stadium this weekend. Mississippi State coming in at number 11 in the D1 baseball top 25 rankings. Ole Miss at number 13. The Rebels will try to get past being swept by South Carolina last weekend in Oxford, the first time Ole Miss had been swept since 2014, the first time they've been swept at home since losing 3-2 then number 2 Vanderbilt in 2013. South Carolina, after two weekends, is the only remaining unbeaten team in SEC play. The Gamecocks swept Arkansas at home on opening weekend, so they are 6-0. Mississippi State comes in 4-2 in conference play. Ole Miss at 2-4. Folks, before we move on, want to remind you about some other podcasts to search for, some Daily Journal productions with a lot of good content and information. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and search for Prep Rally, everything you need to know about high school sports in Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. That's every Wednesday, Prep Rally, and we are here for you with State and Ole Miss every Thursday. But let's talk about this baseball series a little bit, Logan. State had a better weekend last weekend and has actually won both of its first two SEC series last weekend, taking 2 of 3 from Georgia. I was asked this question on head-to-head with Matt Wyatt earlier this week. Do people care as much for, we talk about the rivalry series, we talk about the Egg Bowl, the basketball games. Do they care as much when the baseball series comes around as they do for football and basketball? Where do you think baseball fits in that conversation?
I think in Mississippi it's very serious. It's a baseball state. And I wouldn't say that if it was in Alabama. I really don't think that the fan bases really give two craps about, Alabama and Auburn playing in baseball. But in the state of Mississippi, it's huge. You just look at what they do every year at the Governor's Cup down there in Pearl. I mean, they pack that place out, one year the X, and it actually means something, whoever wins that game. I mean, obviously neither team throws their best guys out there. I mean, they kind of each mutually agreed to continue throwing their midweek guys out there since it doesn't count in the SEC standings. But it's very serious. I mean, I remember being up at Oxford last year when Ole Miss made that huge comeback at the end to end up sweeping that series, and the fans were going nuts, and rightfully so, in that situation. I remember one fan when I was walking down to the stand. I'm not going to repeat verbatim what he said because I don't know that I can repeat that on the podcast, but he said something along the lines of, "We kicked your butt in all three sports," and it was true. Ole Miss swept last year, and that was huge to say that. I mean, that doesn't happen too often, so when it does, you can stick your chest out and brag about that a little bit.
Yeah, Ole Miss has won 8 of the last 12 games in the series, and they've won the last 3 SEC regular season series, and each of them have been somewhat unique, somewhat different, and maybe that's what rivalry series are. Remember, 2 years ago at Mississippi State, Ole Miss might have swept that series had they not just come unglued late, and State had that. I don't remember, Logan, how many runs they were down, but they came back in the ninth, and they either tied it or won it in the ninth. But they, you know, in comeback fashion, they won it walk off. Wes Ray had like had this towering pop up that he got a double right out of because of where it dropped in shallow right field near the first base line. But they had other, well hit balls in that game, and they really came back after Ole Miss had scored, kind of in the late innings, and it looked like. The Rebels were going to pull out game two in that series. And then game three, it was like 12-2, and Ole Miss pounded out 20 hits. It was a much better offensive team for Ole Miss that year. And then last year, you talked about the sweep a little bit, that being in Oxford at Swayze Field. That was the Ole Miss comeback, and they scored like, five or six runs with two outs there in the ninth inning and then win it in the tenth. It was a really bizarre finish to that game. I mean, anytime these two teams get together, the first thing you want to do is win the series. You're not thinking about a sweep, and as you said, you can really poke your chest out when you win the series. And Ole Miss had secured that in two games last year. And anytime you win the first two games of a series, you feel like you've left something on the table if you don't win the third. But you're happy. You're happy if you've won the series. And Ole Miss kind of played like that, I thought, early in game three last year. But then all of a sudden, you get one base hit, maybe a walk, or you get some guys on base, and then how momentum just kind of builds in an inning. And while it builds for one team, it seems like the pressure ratchets up for the other. And, that the comeback in game three last year was really something unusual. And sometimes that's what these series tend to generate. But as far as, where it fits in the big picture of things, look, we know football drives everything. It just does. It's become a year-round conversation piece. We're seeing that with these pro days, with the NFL Combine, and the attention and the coverage that they generate, and the web hits, and, people want to talk about football. They want something football year round. So obviously the rivalry game in football is big. I don't sense, Logan, that it's that big in basketball, regardless of circumstance. If one or both teams are playing well and are somewhat in the conference in the upper third of the conference, if they're in the national conversation somehow, if they look like they're playing their way into a possible NCAA tournament berth, and then yes, it becomes a big deal, and fans are really excited for those teams at that time. But I think the interest in basketball kind of fluctuates, and therefore the interest in the rivalry game as well. I think baseball is a solid number two in that conversation, and I think it stands alone. I don't think it has to piggyback on the excitement of another sport. I think people are very interested in these baseball teams, and I think you make a good point. It's not like that in every state. It's not like that in Alabama. In Arkansas and in Louisiana, those schools, Arkansas and LSU, they have no true in-state rival in any sport. So it's somewhat of a unique thing here. In Mississippi and South Carolina, they have South Carolina and Clemson, two very good baseball programs, but they're in opposite conferences. The Clemson's in the ACC, so those teams do play. They've played twice this year already. South Carolina split. I think they split those games, but two very good baseball programs there, but they don't have the intensity that goes along with playing three games that matter, three games that count in the conference standings, the way State and Ole Miss will play those games this weekend. Looking ahead a little bit, Logan, we talked about Ole Miss getting swept last week. They didn't have a non-conference game. The Memphis game was rescheduled due to impending bad weather. So they haven't had a chance to get that disappointing South Carolina experience out of the system. I don't know that that a midweek game really ever does that anyway. I think it's all about getting back to an SEC series and having success. But it looks like it's State that comes in with some momentum and playing well, and that did carry over for them in the midweek against Southern Miss, did it not?
It did. I actually didn't go down to Pearl. I had to stay back here for football, but I did listen to the game on the radio. That's really the only way to see it. You either had to be there in person or listen to Jim Ellis call the game on the radio, and that's kind of what I had to do. What televised, you know, in today's world, that's rare. I mean, you've got the SEC Network Plus. You can kind of tune into just about every game of the season, and yeah, that wasn't the case Tuesday night. Mississippi State won 13-5 over Southern Miss. It was actually a close game at one point. Mississippi State strung some two out hits together, and that's something they've done over the last few weeks that's really kind of helped them get over that hurdle. I know they kind of had a couple of midweek hiccups against Oral Roberts and Eastern Kentucky, and you kind of really were scratching your head about Mississippi State at that point. They had swept number 9 Oregon here at home the weekend before, and then they dropped those two midweek games, and you really just didn't know what to make of the team. Then they go up to Vanderbilt, who was ranked number 2 at the time. They started SEC play on the road up there, and they took the first two games of the series there, won that series, come back home against Mississippi Valley State, who's just awful, and Mississippi State beats them 16-1. And then they get Georgia coming in last weekend. They take the first two games of that series and probably should have swept that series. That Sunday game was a game that either team could have won. It was actually tied up in the bottom of the 7th inning. John Holland hits a home run that's robbed in right field. And that just kind of led to some momentum on Georgia's side. Georgia comes in their next at bat. And then, of course, the right fielder, the guy that robbed the home run, has a two-run single. And that kind of just built some momentum for Georgia. Mississippi State ended up losing that game 11-8. That game lasted 4 hours and 52 minutes, Parrish. It was longer than any major league game, any nine-inning major league game in history. That's how long that game lasted. And it just didn't seem like it would ever get over with. And it finally
I saw
did.
That, Logan, and I was thinking they needed to speed up that pitch clock a little bit, man. If you're playing that long, that pitch clock's not really having an effect there. It was crazy to think of the game lasting that long, and it was not extra innings, and yep. it wasn't like there was a bench clearing brawl or anything. There was no different circumstance that caused it to last that long, other than I'm guessing some sloppy play in there at times.
Well, actually, the play wasn't that sloppy. I think if I remember correctly, both teams committed one error in the game. It was a lot of walks, ton of walks, a lot of pitching changes, a lot of hits. It just was one of those type of games. And you know, your game and my game started at the same time that day. And I saw the Ole Miss final score come across. And I think Mississippi State and Georgia were in the 6th inning when that happened. I was like, wow. You know, you were full 3 innings ahead of where I was at that time. And it just, you know, it's kind of a game of baseball. You know, you never can tell. Sometimes it's a quick game, and sometimes it's a marathon, like what I saw on Sunday. But what's crazy is I've now covered the two longest 9-inning games in Mississippi State baseball history. And I've also covered the two longest baseball games in Mississippi State history, both of which were 17 innings. So I guess I can put that on my resume one of these days.
Well, I think it was 17 innings that State and Ole Miss played in one of those series here.
It was
many years ago because I remember Cody Satterwhite was pitching in that game for Ole Miss, pitched in relief and pitched like 9 innings in relief or something. Something strange like that. So they've had a long one before. Maybe they won't have a long one this weekend. Should have a good one Friday night. Two good starters going. Dakota Hudson leads the SEC in ERA. I believe that's right, Logan. Is that correct, the Mississippi State starter?
I'm not sure. I know the ERA of 1.13. I don't know where that ranks in the SEC. But
well, I'll give you that figure. Yeah, I'll give you that figure right now. As a matter of fact, I thought I saw that a little bit ago. And
earlier this week that he was they have him projected as the number 9 overall pick in the MLB draft right now. I'm sure that'll change one way or the other before the end of the season, but that's kind of currently where he's at.
Yeah, the current numbers at secsports.com list Dakota Hudson's 1.13 ERA in 39 and two-third innings, you know, as number one in the conference. Now, South Carolina has number one overall pitching staff. Clark Schmidt, the South Carolina Friday night guy, is right behind Hudson, number two in the ERA at 1.29. And all three of South Carolina's weekend starters rank in the top 10 in SEC ERA. Ole Miss has a pretty good one going tonight, too, but Friday night. Brady Bramlett will be looking to come back from a pretty poor start against the Gamecocks. You know, he struggled to find his command, and that's how Bramlett competes. You know, that's, you know, he's not going to overpower you with a big arm. You know, he's going to locate, he's going to hit his spots, and he wasn't doing that early against South Carolina, and Ole Miss fell behind against Clark Schmidt, and, you know, you see the numbers here, 1.29 ERA, you fall behind a guy like that, and you're going to be in trouble, and Ole Miss was in trouble and lost that first game 5-1, and that kind of set the tone for the weekend. The Rebels hit .227 for the weekend against South Carolina. They hit only .190 in games 2 and 3. Really, you know, a poor offensive weekend, and obviously a great pitching staff for South Carolina, but you've got to hit good pitching and score against good pitching to have success in the SEC. And we've talked about it before. Both of these teams, State and Ole Miss, you know, look at themselves as teams that would be in the mix to host a regional. If you're going to win that many games, that's going to take winning 17 conference games. You're going to have to hit and score against good pitching. So we'll see if Ole Miss can have a better offensive weekend. But particularly Brady Bramlett, you know, Logan, so much happens in a Friday night game, that first game of the series. You really can, you know, set yourself up for a good weekend, and you can grab the early momentum. And Bramlett came out last Thursday in game one, wasn't hitting his spots, had back-to-back walks right away. Walks kill you against a good offense. Both of those walks came around to score in the first inning. South Carolina had three hits in the inning. All of a sudden, you're down 2-0, and you're looking at a pitcher who doesn't give up two runs in nine innings on average. Ole Miss just never got going offensively. Had some good moments with pitching. You know, it was a couple years ago, wasn't it, that Mississippi State's bullpen was so good? Was it the College World Series team where it seemed like the starters would go like two innings, and John Cohen was going to his bullpen? That's kind of the bullpen that Ole Miss has right now. That's where their success has come from. But I think it's a little bit of a concern that these Ole Miss weekend starters are not lasting any longer than they have. They haven't had a weekend starter last six innings for a streak of like nine games now. So that's a concern for Ole Miss going into this weekend.
Yeah, for Mississippi State, they've got two pretty good frontline guys on the weekend. I mean, obviously Dakota Hudson is pitching to expectations. I mean, he just hasn't done that over his first 2 years of his career. They always talk about his potential and if he could ever just grasp the strike zone, and that's something that he struggled with the first 2 years. He goes out to the Cape Cod League this past summer and had an unbelievable summer, and we were all wondering would that translate to the actual season itself, and so far that has. I mean, he's been at it as advertised so far this year, and that's kind of helped Mississippi State win those first Friday. I call them Friday nights. So obviously they played on Thursday night last week, but that first game of the SEC series against Vanderbilt and against Georgia, he's pitched really, really well. And then Austin Sexton right there comes in behind him, another junior right-hander. It's kind of been hit and miss this season, kind of the same way he was last year. He's either brilliant out there on the mound or he gets hit around a little bit. And so far in conference play, he's pitched pretty well. I mean, he's kept Mississippi State in the ball game and allowed them to win that game too as well. And they've won the first two games of each SEC series that they've played so far this year. And that's kind of been the key. If you can win those first two games, you're going to win the series, obviously. And set yourself up in a good position to sweep. And it's been that third starter that Mississippi State just really hasn't found. They haven't been able to identify that guy. Daniel Brown is a junior left-hander that they started against Vanderbilt. He got batted around quite a bit. It was actually his defense scored that let him down in that. They committed three errors in the first inning of that game against Vanderbilt on Sunday, and they kind of just put him behind the eight ball. And they didn't start him this past weekend against Georgia. They went with a freshman, Keaton James, who only lasted like an inning and a third. Just couldn't find a strike zone there. So it'll be interesting to see where they decide to go on Sunday against Ole Miss. But hitting-wise, Mississippi State is leaps and bounds better than they were a year ago. They just struggled mightily offensively, and they kind of have been for the last few years, actually. But last year especially was kind of their downfall. And right now they've got 12 hitters hitting over 300, and that's most of those are everyday players. And it's really been impressive, the job that they're doing offensively. And it's given those pitchers a little bit of cushion out there to be relaxed and a little bit more comfortable out there on the mound. You look at a guy like Jacob Robson, he's actually leading the team with a .379 batting average right now. And anytime you're getting your leadoff man on base that much, I mean, he's got an on-base percentage of .488. I mean, that's like unbelievable to have nearly a .500 on-base percentage from your leadoff guy. And obviously, he sets the table for a lot of those cleanup guys like Reed Humphries and Jack Kruger and Gavin Collins. I mean, they've had so many guys come through in the middle of that order in different you know, instances. Has actually had a couple of freshmen step up here in conference play so far. Jake Mangum and then Eli Marrero behind the plate have played really, really well as conference play started. And they're kind of starting to find their groove a little bit and as they become everyday players. And they're taking out some playing time away from some of those older guys just the way they played the last few weeks. So we'll have to see if that continues this weekend.
Well, Ole Miss comes into the series fourth in the conference with a 2.73 ERA, very strong. The Rebels have been erratic on offense, and they are hitting just .278. That ranks 11th in the SEC. They're not getting production throughout the lineup. They're getting some individual production, Logan, that's been pretty good. You know, and you know, a lot of that has been Henry Lartigue at catcher. He was not a very good offensive player right now. He's hitting about 100 points above his average from last year, leading the team right now at .357. Tate Blackman, we've talked about earlier, a sophomore, came in as a top 50 national recruit last year, struggled, did not play up to those expectations. He's hitting about .341. Playing some solid defense at second base. And then they're getting some good swings and some good long balls from J.B. Woodman and Colby Bortles, hitting .322, .321 respectively. But that's kind of where it stops. After that, you know, it's been very erratic. Every now and then you'll see something from Holt Pertzok or Errol Robinson, a preseason All-American who's hitting just .213, Will Golson, but you've not seen these guys come through and perform collectively the way they have in the past. Now, Ole Miss has gotten some good play from a redshirt freshman, a DH, Michael Fitzsimmons, who's hitting .452. He's seen spot duty. Wouldn't be surprising at all to see him get three starts this weekend. So that's Ole Miss offensively. They're going to have to compete better than they did against South Carolina to carry on the recent success they've had against Mississippi State. Folks, we're going to shift gears a little bit. Ole Miss had its pro day earlier this week. There's been a lot of attention on Laquon Treadwell at wide receiver. He's projected to go mid-first round. Some folks having the first wide receiver off the board, but he's getting a lot of knocks right now for his speed, because that's one of the things you focus on at the combine and you focus on pro day. You're not really looking at game speed or what these guys do between the lines. So a lot of talk about Laquon Treadwell's 40-yard dash. He finally ran it at pro day. Did not run at the combine, but he ran a 4.63 at Ole Miss earlier this week. And I want to play for you now an interview with former Ole Miss wide receiver Shay Hodge. He had a very passionate post on Facebook after the Ole Miss Pro Day, kind of talking about how he believes speed is overrated in the evaluation process, and what's more important is what goes on between the lines, route running and technique, and so many other things that go into helping guys become a great player at wide receiver. So here is former Ole Miss wide receiver Shea Hodge, and I'll go ahead and mention at the beginning, too, some good news for Hodge, who has not played since 2012 when he was in the Arena League. He's gotten healthy again, has been able to rehab his knee, and he recently signed a contract with Saskatchewan of the CFL. So that's Shea Hodge, and here he is right now. I'm joined now by former Ole Miss wide receiver Shea Hodge. Shea had some very passionate things to share about the Ole Miss Pro Day earlier this week in a Facebook post. We're going to get to that in a moment. But before we do, Shea, you recently signed with Saskatchewan in the CFL. Tell us a little bit about that and, you know, how that came to be and how excited you are to be going up there.
I'm very excited on how it came to be. Another plan I put together around about 2012 after I got cut, after I finished Arena Ball, I figured out that my knee was way worse off than I ever thought. After getting an MRI, you know, I never understood why I went undrafted after the things that I did in the SEC, but come to find out, there's some serious stuff going on that teams knew about that I really didn't know about. And after getting cut from the NFL, I went on to the AFL trying to get back to the NFL, and I hurt myself again. And being in there, I said, I'm going to figure out what's wrong. You know, it's a reason why I keep getting hurt back to back. So come to find out, had missing cartilage, like a quarter size of cartilage missing in my knee that I played with my whole senior year, not knowingly, you know, but team needed me. I didn't think it was that bad, so I kept playing, and we never knew at the time. So, you know, can't fault anybody with that. So I took on a plan around about 2012, 2013 to get my knee fixed, and I looked up and found what Kobe Bryant used on his knee when he went to Germany called Regenikine, and I got it done finally this year. It took a lot of money to get it done, you know, and it took me a long time to build it up. So I would say this journey has been it's been rewarding, you know, to put a plan together and finally come up with the money and get it done, and to go out there and prove the coaches like I still got it, like check me out. And went through a few tryouts during the CFL season last year. And then the first one I went to this year in January was Saskatchewan. I wowed the coaches so much that they gave me a contract on the spot. So I'm very excited to get up there, very excited to prove what I can do. Just get back to my old ways and play football, man. The thing I love to do and have fun, you know, and take care of my family.
Well, that is great, Shea. Did I understand you to say that the knee, because you kept playing on it your senior year, you thought you could just play through it? Did you make the cartilage worse doing that?
Oh, yes, I made it worse. You know, we didn't know. You know, I never got an MRI while I was in school. You know, we just thought it was just for my quads being weak or my calves being weak. So we kind of rehabbed like I was coming off of ACL or something. And, by playing on it and then my senior year, then after that, you know, just kept playing and not knowing exactly what was going on. It got worse and worse to the point where I barely could walk at one point, like in 2014 or so. I got to the point where I could barely walk, man. It got real bad.
But the MRI revealed all this and let you know what was going on, and so you were able to get that fixed. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what went on.
Well, that's great, Shea. Man, I'm glad, number one, glad you're walking, glad you're feeling better, and glad you've got another chance at the CFL. How did it feel, man, whenever they told you they were so impressed that they wanted to sign you right away?
Man, it was almost tears of joy. I almost cried. I probably did cry a little bit. I don't want to tell everybody, you know, because I've been out of football like 3 or 4 years, man, and I love to compete, man. I love to play ball, you know, and was out of my dream to play, you know, go to the NFL and play for a few years and, you know, go into coaching. But now I got a different path, and God gave me a second chance to go show everybody what I can do, because I'm one of those type of people that love to prove, you know, everything that I'm capable of. I don't want to just you take my word for it. I want to show you, no matter what it is. And I feel like the things that I've done in college exemplify how good I am. You know, I played against a bunch of first-round corners that just got paid again, you know, this year or last year. So, you know, I just put that chip on my shoulder of showing everybody, like, look, I played against the best, and I dominated the best, and I had the best stats in the best conference in America. What makes them think I can't play on Sunday? So I'm about to prove it.
All right, well, let's talk about the Ole Miss Pro Day a little bit and Laquon Treadwell. Like I said, you had a very passionate post on Facebook Monday night after the Pro Day. It sounds like, Shay, that you think speed is kind of overrated in the evaluation process. Is that true?
Most definitely. I've always felt like that because a lot of guys, you know, can't run the 40. That's something you have to, like, practice on a whole bunch. And if you're a football player, you normally not practice. You don't run track. Nowadays they do. And the ones that came out, you know, with me and before me, most of the guys that ran fast had track backgrounds. You know, they knew how to run. They knew how to get in stances. They didn't start out after the season 3 months trying to learn how to run a 40 and run it fast, you know. So I definitely feel like the 40 is so overrated in gauging how good a receiver is. With a corner, I can agree. You got to be fast to play corner, which there are some guys that don't have to be. But, you know, overall as a receiver, if you go back through history, most of the fast receivers are not even the good ones. The greats are not the guys that run 4.3 and 4.2.
What did the NFL tell you about your speed, Shay, whenever you were going through that process?
It wasn't even just NFL. It was in college. You know, I almost got down on myself my freshman year. I played with Mike. Even my mom used to get on me like, hey, why you not as fast as them? Why you not as fast as them? At the time, you know, I kind of lived through the corn right now because at the time I didn't understand why I wasn't as fast as them and why I wasn't this and that. You know, but as I got older and as I got to watch other people and as I look at the greats, there's things that those fast guys can't do that I can do. I have more qualities or equals out in qualities of the skill set that I have that they don't have, you know. So when I came out, and definitely kind of getting knocked by my speed, I remember one scout when I came to Pro Day, and I remember the year before, I won't name this guy, but he gave Michael Orr a hard time telling him that he wasn't that good. So that was the year before I came out. So the year I came out, I asked that same scout, so what you think of me? I want to know personally what you think of me. He told me, he said, I think you can play, but I think you're slow. I think you're going to run 4.7, 4.8. I said, oh, really? I said, okay. So I got out there and ran, you know, and most teams got me between 4.50 and 4.55, you know. So I'm like, how is that a problem with my speed? And he came to me after I ran. I asked him, what did you get me? He told me he had me at 4.52. He said, man, you can play. He said, man, you should get drafted in what, the first four rounds. You know, you had great stats and stuff. You know, speed is not an issue with you. You're fast enough. And, you know, I took that and ran with it. And now as I watch LeCron, it definitely shows me even more of what I said is true. You don't have to be exceptionally fast to be able to run past somebody playing football. As long as you can have competitive speed, game speed, then you're good to go. You know, as long as you can get in and out your routes. If you're our size, because we both 6'2", well, I'm 6'1", what, 7'8", he's 6'2", even. You know, as long as you can get up and get the ball, you know, you're competitively fast and get in and out of your routes, that is a good receiver. You know, not being able to run 4.4, 4.3 and only be that type of guy. You know, it's not many that I know who can run that fast and actually stop. You know, it's not many.
Well, now, when your mama wanted to know how come you wasn't as fast as everybody else, did you tell her she was feeding you too much? Did that have to do with it? She cut back on the portions at night?
No, I couldn't tell her that one. You know, I was out the house by then. I was in college. I couldn't tell her that one because when I came from high school, I was real small. I thought I was fast, you know, in high school. Couldn't nobody catch me. You know, so I thought I was fast. I got to college and met a Mike Wallace, met a Cassius Vaughn, met a Dexter McCluskey. These guys were really fast. I even challenged Cassius to a race because I thought I was fast when we first got there. And Cassius was like, boy, you must not know who I am. Boy, I'm a track star. I was just, you know. And when we got in practice and we got in the summer drills, I seen that I wasn't that fast. I was like, oh, my God. If I would have raced that dude, he would embarrass me. You know, so I just told my mom, just, you know, don't feed the negative energy to me. My mom, I get out here and I make plays, you know. Let me be who I am. I didn't know the answers at the time, you know, but now I do.
Shay, a lot of the draft evaluations that I'm seeing for Laquan right now talk about his physicality, and they describe him as a guy that, quote, wins the catch against defensive backs. I remember some of those qualities in you when you were playing. Do you see the same similarities between yourself and Laquan?
Most definitely. A lot of people try to, you know, they compare athletes, and I get compared to this guy, to that guy. I honestly have to say, that's the guy I would say the comparison is there. And it speaks for itself. Look who broke the record. Look whose numbers are similar. Look at the catches. Look at the touchdowns. It's all similar. Our body types are all similar. one thing he got way more than me. He's way more physical than me. You know, he'll knock a linebacker out. He'll knock a safety out. I wasn't that big blocker like he is, but going up and getting the ball, being able to body somebody out the way of, like, basically like a rebounding basketball, because some people don't know. I was a basketball player, so I know how to rebound. I know how to position myself to work between me, you, and the ball, you know, for I can only get it. You know, he know how to get in and out of his route. He got great hands, you know. So I see all those qualities in me as in to him, you know. So I definitely compare us together. And I can see why scouts think the same thing, you know, that he goes up, he wins the jump ball. He does. He goes up and gets the ball. He posts defenders up. He just know how to play the game. He's smooth. And then when I used to speak to him in the locker room, you know, I told him right around close to first beginning of the season, I told him. Then right around he about to break my record. I used to mess with him, like, man, don't break my record. Let me hold it. Let me hold it, you know. And I told him, like, man, speed is not your game. And I hope you know that. I believe you know that because you're very knowledgeable. You're a very smart guy from what you say in interviews to what you write on social media. I can tell you very smart. You understand who you are. And I was like, that was one thing I didn't understand. I didn't understand who I was. I was trying to be everybody else and trying to listen to my game, trying to be as quick as Dex or fast as Mike. You know, I didn't want to be Shay. I wanted to be somebody else. And I think that was one of the things that he really, really has going in his face. He knows who he is. He's dominant. Like I told you, dominant. You win. Mm-hmm. I don't care what it is. You win in routes. You win with the catch. You win jump balls. You win in blocking. Like, you're dominant. Everything you do, you're dominant. And if you got to run past somebody, you run past him too. You see go outs. He beat some of them corners. He ran 4-3-4-4. You see some of the corners. He ran 4-3-4-4. He beat on post route. So he's dominant. He do what he got to do to win. Don't tell him what he can't do. Other than to run that 40 fast, I never could run it fast either. I felt like I was going to run in the 4-4. I'm sure he felt he was going to run in the 4-5-4-4. But you are who you are. A 40 is a 40. You know, if you can run fast in the game and not run that corner that run 4-4, then you run 4-4 the way I see it.
What do you think, Shay, about the group of receivers at Ole Miss right now?
Oh, man, it's another exciting season. I'm ready to watch it, man. That's my group. I call my group every year. I try to meet them every year and get some type of, you know, bond with them. And I'm excited, man. It's a lot of guys, once again, a lot of guys that can play. It's going to be hard to get time. It's going to be hard to share that ball, even though Kelly does a great job with it. It's going to be hard to share that ball and keep everybody happy, you know, because even the guys that didn't play last year, like a Lodge, like a Van Jefferson, like I keep telling people, they saying that AJ going to come in and play and DK going to play. I'm not saying they won't play, but I'm just showing them, like, it's a track record. Look, throwing five stars coming in there and they're rushing. It's not a bad thing. You get to learn. You get to learn the playbook. You get to get comfortable. Then the next year you come out. I wish I got the red shirt. So being totally honest, a thing, when I came in, I wanted to play early. I was like, I want to play fast. But now when I look back on it, if I waited, if I had a chance to redshirt and play like the year after, I can imagine what those numbers would look like in that situation, you know. So I'm excited about those guys, man. I like those guys like they some of my own kids, you know, or brothers, you'd rather say, because I'm not that old, and I say brothers. You know, I talk to a few of them, you know, that I got a bond with and try to help them with anything I can, you know, because I understand a lot of the game. I want to be a coach at the end of the day, you know, once my career is over. And it's exciting times in Knoxville, man. It's exciting.
That was former Ole Miss wide receiver Shay Hodge talking a little bit of an Ole Miss pro day and how he sees that evaluation process. You have been listening to Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal with Parrish Alford and Logan Lowry. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That's coming to you with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. And every Wednesday, you can look for Prep Rally, everything you need to know about high school sports in Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. Thanks for being with us, folks. We'll be back with you next week.